Welcome to the Center for Lit Podcast Network. You're listening to How to Eat an Elephant, a little book club for large books. Have you ever cast your eyes across a shelf full of classics and been driven screaming from the room by 500-page monsters with thick spines and important names? Then this is the show for you. We're here to take on these scary books together, because how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Well, hello, friends, and welcome back at long last to How to Eat an Elephant. I bet you weren't expecting to hear that from me, were you? You two.
Nope. You two.
You two. We three are back at it again. And we're here because, we're here because we told you we would be. We're here because, along with the rest of you, we were very excited to hear that the life and times of the tiny Frenchman, the great power, Napoleon, we're going to receive an A-list cast and a big Hollywood movie treatment. And so we thought, oh my goodness, this will be so great. We'll watch it together and we'll podcast about it. I think we may even have directed all of you listeners to watch it as well.
We at least posted about it in the Facebook group.
Well, we had high hopes. I mean, Joaquin Phoenix was going to be in it.
I mean, it's Ridley Scott.
Megan, I sense from the past tense there, had high hopes that are your hopes are well
shattered into a million pieces.
I'm not going to lie to you, gentle listeners. It was terrible.
I have only strong opinions.
We watched it together and I wish that we had recorded us watching it because it sounded a lot like a How to Eat an Elephant episode. Like it was.
Yeah, it did.
It was going on. And I was like, Ian and Megan were complaining about it. And I was like, well, wait, guys, this could be intentional for these reasons. And he could be,
we fell right into our
roles this way. And it turns out Ian and Megan were right in the end. And I was not right.
I did my best, you guys. I mean, as you know, I am a little fiery about this kind of thing. And I held strong opinions. And I remember multiple times Megan looking at me from across the couch with this, like, over the top of the glasses, like, you know, this sucks, right? And me going, I'm reserving judgment. I tried. I really, really tried to reserve judgment. It just was too terrible. It was too horrible for words.
It was too horrible for words. I really think that might be our quote.
It was too horrible for. Okay, so let's find some words. It was too horrible for them, but let's find them anyway. Mm-hmm. Why did this miss so hard?
Well, one of the first things I would say is a great transition. It didn't have enough words. There were no ligaments to the story. I mean, if you think of a story like a body of work, there were no ligaments or tendons tying any of it together. Every now and then that Ridley Scott, the director, would drop a date in front of you. Everything about the setting would change. A slightly older, more wizened looking Napoleon would enter the scene and new things would happen. And you would basically have to fill in with your own great knowledge of history what the heck was going on.
And we're like, is this a movie about, you know, Napoleon's legacy? Are we going to question its legacy? Is it about his personal life and the tension with his political life? Like, what thread are we carrying through this movie? And Megan's right. The thread was nothing. The thread was, this happened, and then this happened, and this happened, and that happened, and this happened.
If you haven't seen it, you listener to this podcast, there wasn't a thread. There was no thread.
No, stop looking for a thread.
Thread.
Give up all hope, you who enter there.
It's totally true. I mean, so, okay, I'll say one positive thing. The positive thing is Ridley Scott has not lost it as a cinematographer. It was visually impressive. And in moments, even stunning, I think.
It's up for an Oscar for that quality.
Okay. Whoa, it's up for an Oscar? What has happened to our standards as filmmakers and viewers of cinema here in this
country?
Well,
I mean, if you don't think of it as a whole piece of art and you're just looking at the visuals, sure.
Yeah, okay. Okay, here's what I think happened. I'll take you inside the writer's room. So Ridley Scott is sitting there, and I don't know if he's on some drug or something. I have no idea, but he's not in his right mind. And he's sitting there, he's going, I got this idea. You know, the Battle of Borodino? And his script writers are like, no,
he not
goes,
really.
Go read about it. It's great stuff, but it doesn't really matter because we're not going to do this on an open plain, which is where the battle actually took place. We're going to do it on a frozen lake. Right. And he's like, Napoleon, picture this. Joaquin Phoenix stares into the camera. He's got this moody look in his eye.
It's Joaquin's only look.
It's his only look. Doing his Joaquin Phoenix
look. We cannot miss.
He's got this row of cannons behind him, and they're all covered in tarpaulins so that no one can see them. Even though the armies that he's going to be fighting are so far away, it wouldn't even matter if they were covered in tarpaulins. Anyway, then we'll have him shoot the cannons onto the frozen ice, and the whole army will sink into the water. I think that was his whole idea for the whole movie. I think that was it. I think he went to a studio with that idea and said, picture this. And they were like, great. How long do you want it to be? He goes, 3.5 hours. And they said, awesome. That'll be great. And that was the only scene he had.
I know. I kept thinking, well, there was also, I don't think we're done lambasting it yet. You know, like, we'll try to bring it back from the edge in a moment, but I haven't yet exercised my demons. One of them is this.
The big one?
Well, not the big one. This is a secondary one. Or even okay. Tertiary one.
A tertiary one.
But Joaquin Phoenix chose to speak without any accent whatsoever. Ugh. So he spoke in the most American accent, casual American slang accent that you could envision. And Emily made a great point in her attempt to draw us back from the edge of rage. That Napoleon was supposed to be from out of town, and that people laughed at him for being a rube from the sticks, even in France. Where's he supposed to be from again?
He's Corsican.
Corsica. So, okay.
Which is a province and isn't technically part of France.
Of course, which I think that was a valiant effort on your part, Emily. But at that point, go look up what a Corsican accent sounds like. A Corsican trying to speak English, even. Mm-hmm. If you're choosing to make everyone else in the movie have an accent that's like faintly French.
Well, they went with British.
Well, then try for an accent of any kind. I mean, a little bit, it was so distracting that he was less a powerful character every time he opened his mouth, which I don't think was on purpose on the part of Ridley Scott or Joaquin Phoenix. It made me, as the viewer, feel smarter than them.
That is actually that's a great line. And I hesitate to say this in English on the air, but I will. I do think this whole movie makes you feel smarter than the people that wrote it the whole time, in particular than whatever poor devil wrote the script. Human beings don't talk the way that this script reads. I don't care what century they're from. I don't care what nation they were born into. Human beings don't talk like this. I mean, it is impossible to understand the flow of the story or of anyone's emotions. For example, I don't know if this is a tertiary or a secondary or a primary beef, but there is a scene in which, cover your young children's ears.
Yeah.
Napoleon meets his future wife, and her method of communicating to Napoleon that she thinks he's kind of cute and she might want to go with him is to expose herself to Napoleon.
Yep.
But see, that's one of the broken threads. You could follow that thread. It could become significant. This could be a discussion of their marriage. This, and then the complications thereof, which is historically famous. Napoleon and Josephine had a very tempestuous relationship that ended in divorce because Napoleon wanted an heir, but he still loved her and wrote letters to her. And does it follow that depth? It does not.
No, it does not. Such a waste of I mean, here's the thing. Such a waste of acting talent. Everybody on this cast is phenomenal.
They got the best of the best, man. Vanessa Kirby is a great Josephine. She really is. But she also did not have much to work with. Very few lines. There was, again, just no thread. There wasn't an arc to her character. Her character just was.
Yeah.
And you can only do so much with that.
Well, and in her case, it might have had something to do with Joaquin Phoenix's performance. I was reading around on Reddit the other day, and there was a whole Reddit comment section on whether or not he intended for Napoleon to be a little on the autistic side.
Oh, autistic. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know whether he intended that or not, but that is how the character reads.
Well, then make that a thread.
Right.
Let's have a story.
Yeah, have a reading. I think that's what we all agreed by the end. It's just, if you're going to reinterpret history, then have a reading of it and be consistent and have there be a theme. We're just too much literature nerds to let this go by without a bit of a rant. You know, I think the primary problem, at least from my perspective, is the way that they reused songs from other movies.
That's the big one.
To insert an emotional, or to like elicit an emotional response from us, the audience. Those of you in our audience who love, you know, Jane Austen, Pride and Prejudice, there was a beautiful soundtrack to the Keira Knightley.
Original soundtrack.
An original soundtrack written by a man who is still alive today, a contemporary with us, if you will. He breathes now. He wrote some music for this beautiful Pride and Prejudice love scene, and it's called Dawn, and it's a lovely piece of music, and everyone knows this piece. And in order to elicit an emotion and make us feel that Napoleon was truly in love, they just laid that song over the top of the scene that Ian has already referred to in our podcast that was kind of shocking and explicit. And nothing was going on that was romantic.
And even if it's supposed to be ironic.
Yeah. Even if it was supposed to be ironic, it was thievery. And shallow and distracting.
And not carried out in the rest of the movie. No. It's like they don't do anything else with that. They just drop it in there.
Okay, my turn. Not the only time they do this.
Wait. I don't want to move on from that one though. Can I say something really quick? Because yes, I just Googled it. I Googled it when we watched the movie, and I just Googled it. I can only find one woman on TikTok who was talking about this. Why is no one talking about Dawn in this movie? Not from the time period.
Nope.
Dario Marinelli wrote this piece, and they literally, Megan, was it you who was saying that it was like an intern dropped it in there as like a like we'll fill this later, and then they forgot to fill it back in with an original
score. It was
score.
Like a college student's notes, and they were like, and then insert here romantic feelings, and they never went back to it.
So some intern was like, oh no, I know what we'll do.
Made it to the final cut.
The only thing that I could find when I Googled around about this issue is that there is a connection personally between Marinelli and, I'm so sorry to lambaste a guy on the air and not remember his name, but the man that wrote the score for the Napoleon film. And I think they have been collaborators in the past.
How did that conversation go, though? Can you imagine?
I can't find any evidence that he was involved in the writing of the Pride and Prejudice soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know. But hey, it's not the only time they did it. At least they did it twice, right? The other thing they did was took a score from War and Peace, the miniseries that you all listeners are probably tired of hearing us talk about, right?
Yeah.
This wonderful miniseries with a beautiful score that I listen to all the time. They took a piece from that and laid it into one of the battle scenes.
The piece, you guys. The one that Emily and I famously sang to you many times.
You've heard it on the air here in this show.
The Battle of Borodino. They just picked up that song and just laid it back in. They were like, Borodino, that music is ours. No, it isn't. Somebody else wrote that.
Okay, so let's talk about how ridiculous this is for just a second. Here we are, all up in arms. Mm-hmm. The only previous sketch of Napoleon, well, at least for me, Emily's done some reading. The only previous sketch of Napoleon that I have is from War and Peace, Tolstoy.
Yeah.
Who's an enemy of Napoleon. I mean, he did a better job of talking about Napoleon and giving us a sketch of the man that was, I mean, he didn't pull any punches, but it was balanced.
And alive,
right? Yeah. It wasn't wooden. It wasn't caricaturish. It was a real person under Tolstoy's pen.
Yeah. I was so excited for this movie because Napoleon always causes interpretation to take place. There are always takes on it. Tolstoy's was super negative. Hugo's was moderate. I don't know. There are people in history who really venerate Napoleon, and then he's also like representative of a dictator in some ways. So like Napoleon invites interpretation, and this movie refused to interpret, to at least follow any of the lines of interpretation that it begins as possibilities.
What did you say about it, Emily, when we were done watching it the first time? You said something like, this reads like a history professor whose job was to give the important names and dates to a bunch of undergraduates who got a hold of a huge film budget and a bunch of talented people and was like, okay, now we're going to make a fully embodied set with costumes for each one of these individual historical moments.
Right. That's what I meant when I said it feels like a body with no ligaments. Mm. Like each one of these is a great visual aid to a lecture. But it's like the lecture was removed from the movie. Mm-hmm. And so there's no overall heft.
What no. I was saying, I think that was Megan's line. What I was saying is it reads to me like the people who dress up for like the Civil War reenactors, like a historical yeah. reenactment. And they thought, wouldn't it be fun if we reenacted the French, you know, I almost said the French Revolution, incorrect. You know, whatever although, you technically call the wars that came after.
I'm not going to help right. you. You got to just do this.
You have fallen into a hole and we're laughing at you.
But yeah, it's like, let's dress up like the Napoleonic era and shoot yep. guns at each other. And won't it look cool? It's just like a history mm-hmm. buff thing.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, I mean, I've kind of shot my shot at this point. I don't think I have anything left to say. I was so disappointed. I was crushed.
And also, it just took so long. I mean, after all of that, I mean, Emily had to have said to us in a mollifying tone of voice, give it some time. Let's see where it goes. And she had to say it 100 times. Bless her. I mean, she had to say it hundreds of times because the movie went on for 800 hours.
It was so long.
Like, I remember we paused with like a half hour left in the movie and I still yeah. was like going to refill my wine glass and was like, it's gonna have, well, let's see how the conclusion yeah. they're gonna tie it surely. All up in the conclusion,
they're gonna
surely.
Tie it all together. The conclusion is gonna be so satisfying and we'll be like, oh, we've got to watch the whole thing again. No, the conclusion just sort of, it just sort of ends. I don't even remember how it ends, you guys. I mean, I know Napoleon is dead by the end.
He falls over dead during in exile.
He falls over. You guys, yes. he just yes. falls out of a chair and the movie is over. And I felt very much
frame.
Like, oh.
He just falls yeah. out of frame.
Of course he did. We all just sort of fell out of our chairs and left.
I just can't even. I can't even.
It's an appropriate ending for the movie. I will give it that.
It is. I actually think now that we're talking about it, maybe I can forgive the movie a little bit as I move on. I think I found closure just now.
Like charitable reading is that they're like, let's present them with what happened and allow the audience to make a judgment about Napoleon. But even so, they didn't give us enough to work with.
Mm-mm. No, because here's the deal. If that is their goal, if their goal is just to plop the facts in front of you and say, be your own interpreter of history, then their goal, their job should be not to leave any out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or give us the right facts and not right. falsehoods, like Ian was saying.
It's like we do have to talk a little bit about how you interpret history. You can't leave any facts out, or you are interpreting just by which events you choose.
Which it felt like they started a bunch of lines of thought that they never finished. They mm-hmm. started the Josephine and Napoleon thread and didn't really finish that, except for like briefly and very unsatisfactorily, which maybe reflects the true relationship. I don't know. But they started the Napoleon divided between his personal and civic life, and that never really got followed through. And Napoleon as dictator or as man who actually cares about the people. Like the opening scene is the beheading of Marie Antoinette. And I was like, here we go. He looks like, if you are reading Joaquin Phoenix's face carefully, it looks like maybe he's disgusted by revolution in
France.
You were
already thinking harder than Joaquin. Yeah.
This is supposed to represent how, even though he might go on and like do a lot, like perform a lot of the same cruelties on people of other nations, like he feels in his core that it is inhumane and that's going to be
inflicted.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem.
Yeah.
His face never changed. That was it. That was the face. It was just the first time you yeah. saw the face. That's right. It was the same face.
Like, ooh,
the whole
an
film.
Interesting face.
I just
that's
I wouldn't
what really
be shocked
too.
Like I literally would not be shocked at all to find out in years down the road that what really happened with that script is that they allowed all the actors to ad lib it. Like maybe they just dressed them up in pretty costumes and sent them onto these sets and said, "Talk to each other. We don't really care what about."
I mean, it felt like that. It really did.
Okay, I have two more quibbles.
Salvos. Okay.
Mm-hmm. If you're not okay, so if you're not going to pay any attention to, for example, uniformity of accent, mm-hmm. you still can't let an important character refer to Lady Death as the guillotine.
I know. And many of them did.
You can't do that.
Nope.
The other thing you can't do is have Napoleon fly into a rage at an ambassador from England.
Oh, yes.
And say, you think you're so important because you have boats?
I think I want a sticker of that or like a t-shirt. You think you're so important because you have boats.
Oh my gosh. I mean, if you
actually, so Adam Andrews just bought a boat, and I think that everyone should get a t-shirt for to wear on the boat. Yeah. That's, you think you're so important,
because you have boats.
That is brilliant. Oh my gosh.
Oh, we got to get that t-shirt stat. That's amazing.
Or at least a bumper sticker for the boat.
Oh my goodness. There are some movies that are so bad, they are fun to watch.
I know.
This is one of those that was bad and it was embarrassing to watch.
It's sad.
It reminded me actually a tiny bit of Cyrano. Is that what it's called? I think they just called it Cyrano.
Oh man. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cyrano.
We do this all the time. How do we do this?
Yeah. Well, it's a really epic story. And we were sure that it was going to be great because it has Peter Dinklage in it. Like, he's fabulous.
Great
actor.
Premise. It's a great,
really great
idea.
Premise.
A spin for Cyrano. Great idea.
Yep. Instead of a guy with a really big nose who's sure that no woman will love him because he's like basically disfigured and ugly, which is the French story. Instead, they were like, okay, how about a dwarf who is insecure about his smallness, and he is going to write poems of love to the woman of his dreams and let some other man give those poems to her. Mm-hmm. Like, here's the premise. And it was like, Peter Dinklage, his face is going to be on this thing. It's going to be great. He's so compelling. And Ian famously watched about 20 minutes of that movie and then left in a huff. I mean, he was so mad at how bad that movie was. He left in wrath and never came back. Yep. And Emily and I finished it because Emily and I were saying, just like with this movie, it'll get better.
It's gonna the National wrote the music. Yeah, it's going to be fine.
And you guys, I mean, if there could be a close second and worst movie ever, Napoleon is first and Cyrano is second.
Yeah. Yeah. At least Napoleon didn't pretend to be a musical.
Honestly, I wish it had.
Can you imagine Joaquin? Same face though. Singing, belting it. Absolutely belting it. Dead above the eyes. Totally
you
dead.
You think you're important. because of your boats.
Yeah, that would have been better. You're right.
Oh, okay, you guys. Well, thank you for joining me on this screed. Sorry to you listeners that it took us so long to get around to it. It took us a month and a half to recover.
I had a vision for this episode and how it was going to be an awesome like extra, and instead we really didn't get much to work with.
No.
I think this was an awesome extra.
Nor did we hold back. I mean, I do feel like we laid into it. If any of you listeners watch that movie and you think, hey, I thought it was pretty good, please let us know why. Maybe you can change our minds. I doubt it. But I encourage you to try.
What I was going to say, Megan, is if any of you listeners watch this movie and liked it, you're wrong about that.
You're just wrong. That just goes on personality types.
I will patiently
listen to you, but I withhold judgment.
Well, if you haven't seen it, join the party. Go watch. No. Go watch it. Go watch it, and then jump into the Facebook group, and we can all lambaste it together. And hey, let's have an Oscars watching party. Maybe cinematography will win an Oscar. Who knows?
You guys, wow. If Napoleon wins an Oscar, I'm going to be so mad.
Because there are some really good movies up for Oscars this year.
Yes, there are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys, before we log off, are we coming back?
Well, I want
dun,
to.
Dun, duh.
Here we are. We're into the new year. We said we'd come back in the new year.
It's true. Do we have a book picked out yet?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we do.
Remind me.
I'm sitting here waiting, Emily, because are we allowed to say it?
Well, I don't know. Are we allowed to say it? We didn't talk about this beforehand, but when are we going to reveal the new book? How about this? We'll tease it with this. There is also a movie of the book that we're doing.
Yeah,
that we could do.
A classic.
Episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A classic. That's true.
Well, with that teaser, half a teaser, we will let you guys go back to your lives. Thank you for joining us on this review. Can we call it a review of Napoleon?
I don't know. I think we just ripped into it.
Yeah, well, we're really excited to be back in the saddle for more episodes of How to Eat an Elephant. We will keep you updated as to our progress so that you can pick up the next big old scary book alongside us. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you next time. Happy reading.
Happy reading.
Happy reading. How to Eat an Elephant is a part of the Center for Lit podcast network. Visit our website at www.centerforlit.com to find our other literary shows, resources, and our membership program, the Pelican Society, where you can get access to a variety of live discussion groups. You can also find us on most social media channels. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, happy reading!